Hello and welcome to Prime Lenses. I'm Ian. Each week, I speak with a guest about three lenses that have meant something to them on their photographic journey. And this week, my guest is Michael Howard. Michael is the founder of Photo, a photo-sharing app that he started with the goal of making a better place to share our images online. One that's designed to embrace photography and help you enjoy it in a more human way, as opposed to using our favourite art form to sell us bags and show us meme videos. We discuss where the idea came from, how he allowed it to develop slowly over time, and what he and the small team are putting together and plan to do next. So please sit back and enjoy this conversation with photographer and maker of delightful software, Michael Howard. I feel a kinship. You know, when you use a piece of software, or you use a product, and you can feel the people through the product,
right?
And their intention, and maybe what matters to them. And I think that's been one of the lovely things about listening to your podcast, and then using the app, and sort of starting to get a sense for kind of like what you're trying to build. So, can you give us the origin story? Because I don't normally do this, but like my mental setup for this, and I was listening to The Verge at the weekend, and they were talking a lot about the landscape, the Google and Apple and Meta antitrust trials, or cases, that are going on right now that are rumbling through the legal system, and the fact that they're going to result in tech behemoths that might well feel and look quite different 12 months from now. And I think a while ago, launching your application might have seemed an odd thing to do, but I feel like the change that's coming positions you, being where you are now, kind of perfectly to take advantage as well of people are identifying that these people have too much of our information, thanks very much, and the way that they do things is not great. So can you give people listening a bit of the origin story of Photo and kind of what prompted you to start this project?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how far back you want to go. I was never one that got onto Instagram like immediately. I think back in those days, when Instagram launched in like 2010, I mean, it was really a few years since I was really like, okay, I'll get on. I wasn't an early adopter at the time. It was too much of like pictures of foods of what you had for lunch with your friends or something. Yeah. And I just like, I don't see the point in this. Like, this is weird. Then I came around kind of in the mid, 2013 to like 2018, 2019. I think that was kind of in its, probably peak, I would say, experience. But even in 2018, I was never really satisfied with it. There was always some sort of lingering dissatisfaction with the structure. And part of that, it was just like, I felt that Meta or Facebook, you know, at the time, didn't really respect like photography or images in that way. And I always just felt like it was more of an entertainment app more than anything, just based on a lot of their decisions. And then when they started just leaning into video, it was just like, well, this is over. I kind of mentally in 2018 was like, somebody should build something. It's like, I don't have time. I'm not, but if I did, it would maybe look like this. So it's just something in the back of my head. And I think Adam around, 2021, 2022, he came out very publicly in like a video or interview or something and was like, hey, we're no longer a photo sharing app was the sentence. And it was just like ripples went through kind of the industry of like, it's official now, like even though like I think we all knew in the back of our heads. So that's when I was like, okay, I'm gonna start designing some stuff. So I like hired a designer to kind of just do some mock-ups of some screens, and I just really let it sit for a year. I never shared those publicly, and I just kind of put it on the back burner. And then literally the next summer, I think it was like in July 2023, something like that. I mean, I don't know, my timeline's off, but he basically said it again, like a second time.
Double down.
It's like, okay, like double down 100%. So I was like, okay, so that's when I like went public with it. And I was like, okay, I have this idea, let's build it. And it's completely bootstrapped and community supported from the beginning. And I just put a call out, I shared the screenshots, and I was like, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I've actually had designed so far. If you're kind of interested in this, like, it'd be cool if we could raise like just a couple thousand dollars to help me kind of do some more designs and get to the next phase. And within a week, like, we had it, and I had people just from all over the world, just like, hey, here's $50, $20, here's $100, just complete strangers. And that to me was so revolutionary and just encouraging. I just had some designs that we don't even use now, but just the desire for that was so, you know, palpable,
yeah,
kind of in the photography community online, that people would just throw money at me without even being like, who are you? Like, nobody really vetted me. They just were like, do the thing, go make it. So yeah, so we've been on a journey ever since then, and haven't stopped. So we're still plugging along every day.
The great thing about podcasts is you can do things whilst you're listening. So go and download Photo while you're listening, because I think the thing that I had some of the reluctance or reticence that you had about Instagram, I had when thinking about something like Photo, or the same with Blue Sky and Mastodon. And I was like, do I want to do this again? Because every time we bring, every time we bring everyone along, and I'm an old school open source hippie, so I worked on Ubuntu, Canonical way back when, like in like 2009, and was working there trying to like move that sort of mission forwards, and I sort of have been very cautious about some of these bigger companies, and even the ones like their technology I rely on every day. It's like, how do I feel about the influence and control over my workflow as a creative person that being in an Apple ecosystem or being in a Microsoft ecosystem has, and you know, the restrictions that are put in place. And you know, I monthly think about blowing it all up and just getting a ThinkPad and sticking Linux on it and just starting again, right? Like, and just, you know, going super simple. But I think the great thing about using Photo, and that's been really nice, is the way that you encounter people in a different way. And you've just published some stuff this weekend gone about the reason, the rationale behind things like you can't freeform put in tags and stuff like that, and like those choices. They're very specific choices, aren't they? Like, you're trying to create something in a very mindful way, it seems like.
Yeah, we're definitely trying to do things different. Like, while I think on the skin or the surface of things, it feels familiar in a lot of ways in terms of the UI, which we did intentionally. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel and make it. We wanted to reduce some of the friction in terms of onboarding. It needed to feel a little bit familiar, so we didn't have to like train and teach people how to like use this entirely new user interface, knowing that over time that it'll adapt and evolve. But yeah, I think a lot of, I mean, I wrestle with this every day, and it's really just about algorithms and how we consume all the things that we consume on a daily basis. And really the last decade, it's really just come in the last 10 years, honestly, has changed a lot. Everything used to be kind of chronological before then. I think it was 2016, whenever Instagram introduced the algorithmic feed. So it was 9 years ago, but yeah, we're so used to being like spoon-fed in a way, and we don't have to like think as much. It's just go and just scroll, and we tend to just shut our brain off, and it's very easy. But there's a lot of negatives also to that. Over the last 9 years, there's a book I think called The Chaos Machine. If you've ever read that, but it's about a lot of social media and algorithms. And some of the negative side of it, and just rabbit holing people and, you know, taking them from one world point of view, and you go on a YouTube recommendation rabbit trail that leads you into becoming maybe like an extremist in something. And it's just, there's just some of these algorithms that, because you watch something or you search something once, doesn't necessarily mean you need to continue down that path day after day after day. And they're dangerous, and it's really an AI. Like, an algorithm is, you know, how they're structured is essentially just an AI thing that's trying to predict your next move, which is what we see with ChatGPT and writing, and it's trying to predict the next letter, essentially. And I don't think that's healthy long term. And so we're trying to do some stuff where we put the user in control. And to do that, we need to build a foundation of features and search. And it comes back to a lot of just foundational search and discovery conversations and theories and philosophies. And it's a little tricky for us because a lot of people aren't used to that anymore. I think they've almost lost that muscle in a weird way. They just want to be like, just shove it in my face.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have to even think about what I want to see. You should tell me what I want. So we're trying to step back, really lean all in on photography and images, which is a slower, more contemplative experience than video or audio. And so we want to build the features around that and really try to reimagine, like, 10 years from now, if we build these certain features, what could we do? What experiences could we unlock? How could we give users more freedom to explore our world and learn and educate and not necessarily tell them what they need to do all the time? So it's definitely a push-pull. Like, I think people deep down, they want more control, but they also get frustrated with some of the friction that comes with it. Mm. At the same time, it's maybe too much work. So we need to do things to reduce some of that friction while also still letting them kind of control their experience that they want to have on photo. So we're just chipping away at that slowly. And the search engine is like the big thing. Like, I think eventually the long-term view is what you could just have, like, essentially a Google search type bar. Essentially, it's just a blank field. You can type in whatever you want and you can start pulling up stuff from all over the world, you know, in the past, wherever, and really explore and do a lot of interesting things. So
looking at stuff over time sounds really, really cool. Because you've talked a lot about things like portfolios and galleries and stuff like that, those kinds of features, which feel inevitable in a really good way. You know, like as people start to use this and sort of fill it up with stuff, like I was finding photos for something for work earlier today and being able to search things. I'm an old school Flickr user, so I tag a lot of images. Like, I'm fairly careful about tagging stuff because it all goes onto a NAS drive somewhere and stuff like that. So I feel like that makes sense. And as someone who makes an audio only podcast, right, like, I also, like you, I'm thinking carefully about how to make something and why why it exists, and accepting the trade-off there of like how much more slowly the thing will develop. But I think that's good. I don't know if you listen or read The Verge at all, but they've done a podcast this week about those AI chat pins that you can get that just listen to everything. Have you heard about these?
I know of them. I haven't heard this podcast though.
Oh, so they're for listeners, it's worth going and listening. They're a nightmare product. And at one point, David from The Verge is talking about like wearing this thing and how he said, like, I just wanted this thing to listen to the TikToks and the songs and things, and then I can just search everything I was exposed to that day. And I'm just like, no, that sounds terrible. What on earth will you do with that information? Like, the one time where you get the name of a song in a coffee shop versus just the digital detritus that you're creating through wearing something like that, just not even from a privacy concern, which is a nightmare in of itself, but like, why? It's the Jurassic Park thing of like, your scientists needed to stop to figure out whether or not they should, you know? It seems like we're going down an odd path as a people right now.
Yeah, Black Mirror coming to life in a lot of ways, scary. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting, there's a lot of good and bad going on all at the same time. There's a lot of, as you look through technology, the history of technology, I think there's you feel and sense that we're trending, like if you really scale back at like a meta view, that it's like humans are just slowly going to become more integrated with computers. And I just don't feel like I feel like we're coming together at some point. And I have no idea if that's going to be a good or bad thing. Hopefully we can figure out how to navigate that in an ethical way that we don't lose our humanity. But there's nothing in our technology advancement history that's saying that we're not just barreling straight towards that future.
Oh, we'll make some terrible, terrible choices along the way. I think I look at a lot of the products that are sort of happening around this kind of like AI gold rush that's happening right now. And everyone's like, I think 15, 10 years from now, we'll all be like, it was all just software. Like, we just gave it a funny name for 5 minutes and then sort of, you know, but there's too much throwing it at a wall. I'll steal another David Pierce phrase, but like the throwing it out and going, is this a thing? You know, like the Rabbit R1 devices and stuff like that, the humane pins. Like, there's definitely a problem to solve. I'm just not sure the idea of, I'm just not sure the way that you're solving the problem is actually meeting anyone's need. You're just sort of making it because you can. And also at the moment, they're a little bit wonky and they don't work very well yet. But like, it's a question of, I'm not having that moment that I had when you saw an iPad for the first time and you're like, and Steve Jobs sits down and reads on it for a bit and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of solving a need. Because like back then, my laptop had big fans in it and was heavy and the battery didn't last very long. And so here's something that puts you in a different mode, puts you in a comfortable space. Or digital photography, right? Where like film costs are high, processing can be slow, it can be inconsistent, it can fail. You can totally see how that would be a useful thing, right?
I definitely think there's some, there's good and bad. I mean, we don't really need AI generated images. Like that's just, we don't need that. But there's use, I mean, AI with like medical situations or, and sometimes we even think of AI for helping reduce some of the friction stuff. Like I think long-term, I could see us possibly, if we can do this ethically and correctly, would be when somebody uploads a picture, being able to like suggest tags for them automatically so that we can have like 10 million tags essentially, but they don't really have to scroll a list. It does a good enough job to suggest to them and they only look at those. And then that gets, you know, tagged and then it unlocks a lot of powerful search because everything's consistent and recorded and built in this really great database. So there's things like that, I think, you know, different problems we can solve, but there's, they're just going full heads, you know, full on with some stuff that we just, humanity didn't really ask for. So
I think it's because spell check isn't sexy enough, right? Like it's a bit like when telecoms companies go and buy movie studios and you're like, why did you do that? Like, isn't it good enough being like a core infrastructure? Like, no, we got to make movies or we got to do whatever. And it's like, do you? Yeah. Like, it's, I don't know. It just seems funny. Like, we're inventing stuff that like be really good, like you're saying, at tags and spell check and like, you know, things that humans are bad at, like things that we miss. But drawing a wonky picture of a dog and going, now put a hat on that duck, just doesn't seem like the best use of anyone's time.
Rather solve cancer or something else. Like, let's do, is it for that?
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, some stuff that we can all agree is bad.
Yeah, exactly.
So when, obviously now your day to day, like you're thinking about this sort of stuff, but photography, one does not accidentally wish for a better future for photographers. Where did your photography begin?
1997 in Southwest Missouri, Springfield, Missouri. Discovered it in college, so wanted to be a marine biologist of all things. I think that was something in the 90s. I think a lot of people wanted to be marine biologists. I don't know. SeaWorld was really popular back then. But I kind of found pretty early in college that I was like, this is too hard in science land. I'm not going to do this. So went to, was like, I'll do underwater photography. I can still be in the ocean, but like don't have to know Latin for all these like body parts.
Right.
And then as soon as I got in like photo 101, it was just an amazing thing that immediately like captured all of my attention. Like anybody, you see your first print come up in the developer and it's like, wow, this is magic. So hooked ever since. So I got a BFA in it. And then I just shot commercially, like a lot of weddings and some fashion stuff, personal work, editorial stuff, just kind of dabbled. Been in Nashville since 2004. Kind of been, you know, did some assisting with some of the music photographers here at the time on some sets. And and then started a print lab 2014. So photography is really just like all I know and all. I've always like, well, I should go get another job somewhere else, maybe, and have some stable income. But anytime I've ever actually looked at that stuff, I'm like, I'm not qualified for any of this. Like, I just know photography. That's so, I've been doing that for 28 years or whatever at this point. So, And so there's different phases to it, but it's definitely been all a part of my life since I was 18. Years old.
I love how specific you were when you said 1997. I was expecting for a second there you'd have like almost GPS coordinates.
Right.
You're like, no, it was on in this location. You know, like the Oscar Barnack thing in Wetzlar where they've got the bit on the floor that's like, this is where the first photo was taken.
Right.
With a Leica.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. Yeah. Photography is, yeah, it's magic. It's something I still wrestle with and fight through. And it's like this never ending thing that you can't ever fully master 100%. So it's always this elusive thing, but it's opened a lot of doors for me. It's connected to me at a lot of interesting people that I probably wouldn't have been connected to if I was in some other industry. A lot of really beautiful human beings that have a lot of empathy and care and are just super observant of the world around them and just think deeply about things that I feel like I've also have a shared interest in. So just keeps me coming back all the time.
Do you know the Roger Ebert quote about cinema being a machine for empathy?
No, but that's... Have you ever heard that quote?
It's,
sounds good.
It's a phenomenal quote. It's really good. I mean, that's it. But basically, I think photography is very similar. And when I was listening to your podcast recently, was it Angela was talking about the photograph being a new fact, which was a phrase I'd not really thought of. And suddenly, like, struck me, hit me like a truck. I was like, ah, yes. And I think that's the great gift of talking to creative people and being around creative people, is that their observations and the way they see the world can influence. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to like it. But when you do vibe with something, I feel like that's something we don't get any other way other than connecting with things that people make. Whether, you know, whatever your preferred art form is, like mine is photography, stroke film a little bit and things like that. But like, that's the juice, right? And that's why making an app that connects people and allows them to experience other people's perspectives is one of the most powerful things probably that you could be doing in, you know, in the space. And it's so cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I kind of think of photographs as like portals or windows or something in a way, like you get to travel space and time and all of these things and kind of put yourself where somebody else was standing. And they took enough time and care to say like, hey, I think this is interesting, or I think this is important. And to make something of that view and share that with others, I think, is very beneficial. I think in a lot of ways, photography is just good for humanity. And I think we've just kind of, I think we've lost that in a weird way the last 15 years. Just, I think it's just become more of a tool to like gain clout and become popular or build an audience to like, I don't know necessarily to what end or what the point is. Yeah. You know, when I went to college, I fell in love with it because of, the history of it, you know? So like we learned the entire history of photography and all the way back from the first picture taken and all that. And so seeing how people used it to like enrich their lives, and it becomes kind of like something they do on a daily basis, or, you know, at least weekly, no matter where they are, no matter what they're doing. And so it's, yeah, I think that's the cool thing about photos is kind of brought some of that back for me. Cause I feel like I lost a bit of the desire to like to make photographs. Cause I feel like I lost a bit of like the purpose of it. And so even like using, you know, the app I've built, it's kind of rekindled a bit of like, I want to get back into film, and if I did a project, what would that be like? You know, and just starting to like look around the world more, like, oh, I think that would be an interesting. I need to go back and take a picture of that at some point. And you start thinking of things. So before, I just got burnt out where I just felt like I need to post this, so I get attention, so I can sell this other thing, and then it becomes a vehicle to something else that it's not really meant to be. So.
When you're shooting your personal work, you mentioned film there. Have you been going back to like shooting a bit of film, or do you have like a thing that is the tool you take off the shelf, which is like, these are the ones for me?
I'm in the phase of like kind of getting back into it. I've the last 15 years, I kind of have struggled, you know, I kind of went, I was film all the way through. I think my first digital was like 2006 or something. It was the Canon 5D, whatever, first full frame. So I did that and used that for weddings. And then I kind of got burned out of weddings, and I kind of brought film back at, like from 2000, 2012 to 2016. I shot a lot of film at weddings and just personal work at that time. And then, you know, as I was building my lab and the print lab I own here, you know, I ended up like selling a lot of the gear at that time, like 2016, 2017, because we needed some money. And I like really regret it because I had like an X pan at the time. And so it was just worth like gold now. So,
yep.
Ouch. My Hassie had a Leica M6 I sold. Like I had a good little thing going there. It was a lot cheaper then. And now I look at the prices now, I'm like, ugh. So, but I did even a month ago, I got my Hasselblad 500, you know, Hasselblad 500 CM or whatever back. And I've kind of found that I don't, I was just trying to think of like a daily carry thing. Right. So ended up getting a couple point and shoots with film, just 35 millimeter. Where I can just take, just, you know, autofocus, just as simple as thing, but just so I have something. So when I'm out, and I literally have never had one. I've always like, I gotta have some sort of SLR or something.
Right.
So I'm just kind of rethinking everything. So I'm trying to like carry a point and shoot with me everywhere. If I can take one or two pictures a day of just something, just as a habit to kind of fit it into my life, find something interesting to take a photo of, just almost like a visual journal sketchbook kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Not looking to like reinvent the wheel or whatever, but just make it a practice. So that's kind of where I'm at with it now, but we'll see. So I'm already batting around a project, but I have no idea if I'm going to actually ever do it. It's just a concept right now, but we'll see.
Yeah. I'm trying to kind of, I'm unburdened by this being my job, right? Like photography is not my work. Mm. So I can kind of be at play. And so I'm trying not to turn taking pictures into, because otherwise you go to events and like you should just be enjoying some time. And you're like, well, I've got to get coverage.
Right.
And you're like, you're not, like, just calm down. Like, just enjoy the sports event you're at or the family thing or whatever, rather than trying to get a photo of everyone and trying to make it a good one and trying to, you know. Like, but I did come up, I was traveling a lot this weekend, the holiday weekend, and we just, I saw a bunch of light up signs that had instructions on them, right? Like, you know, check in, pay here, do this, right? And I just realized how many small light up plastic boxes tell us what to do on a daily basis, and that kind of amused me.
Yeah.
And so I've got this kind of project in my head now where, and I live in like the middle of nowhere in Scotland in a forest, so it's going to be hard for me to do this when I'm not traveling.
Yeah.
But like the finding light up signs, neon instruction effectively is the idea, and just find a lot of these things and see what I can find. And what was funny was I was like, having a project like that on the go, having something that's in the back of your mind is quite a fun little thing, and you can post it places or not, but like it's just having this mental little thing in the back of your mind. And I saw a neon sign in the window of a shop in London at the weekend, and it said, "You deserve new shoes." And I was on a bus, right? And I was bummed out because I couldn't get down there to get a photo of it. And then my wife was like, "Well, no, it's not an instruction. That's just a suggestion. That's just an observation. That's not." And so there's already, within the space of 48 hours, there's now rules to the game.
Right.
Right. The game. Yeah. You know, you can't, it can't just be as simple as a glowy sign.
Yeah.
That's,
it's not going to work. It's not going to work for your future photo book. It's not going to fit in there. So don't do it.
Exactly.
Just edit it out now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, edit it out now, and then I won't have to kill my darlings later on when I'm like sitting down with Dan and I've got all the sheets on a table and he tells me it doesn't fit. Yeah. Like, you know, he won't have to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's hilarious. I mean, I think it's great to do little projects like that. I've thought of like, just anytime I see the American flag, I should just try to take a picture of it, just because it's like we're kind of in a weird place right now. So maybe it'll over time. It's just one of those things of like, you know, it may not feel meaningful now, but I wonder in 20 years what those pictures, how they might be interpreted later or something. So you just need to take it now. So
yeah, take it now, because I think the other thing is that sometimes when you're making pictures, you don't know why that appealed to you in the moment as well, but it definitely, like sometimes it spoke to you, and it's sometimes it's light and it's texture and it's whatever. And then it's when it's a bit further in the rearview mirror, you can go, oh, that's why, like you say, like you're feeling like things are a bit unstable. So that's the thing, you know, it's on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's the most meaningful work ever produced or not is irrelevant.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Do it for the,
yeah.
Yeah. value-based creativity. Do it for the joy of making, you know?
Yeah. I think we all, I think as photographers, you kind of get an itch sometimes or visually. So like, sometimes you'll see something and some, I don't know, it's almost like a feeling or something inside of you. You get like the tingles or something. You're like, I need to take a picture of that. Like I'm meant to go over there and take a picture of that. I don't know why, but I'm just supposed to, kind of a feeling. I had lost that for a long time. I don't feel like I need to take a picture of anything. But as I drive now, I'm like really looking for stuff. So it's been good. So it's been good to have that feeling back. I'm like, oh, I haven't felt some of that stuff in a long time.
Do you still get some of that as well from the print, you know, being involved in the print studio as well and seeing other people's stuff coming in? I'm assuming you're printing other, like seeing other stuff come through.
Yeah, and that's always fun. Yeah, I mean, we see hundreds of pictures all the time, and seeing different, perspectives. I mean, I don't know how many images I've seen in my life over, like, not just social media, but just running a print lab. Just how many, prints and images that come through here. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands. You get a peek into other people's lives a little bit, and you're kind of like curious, like, what type of people they are and lives that they lead and different places, you know, from people all over the world, kind of a deal. So it's very cool. It definitely has kept me, it still keeps me mentally, I guess, sharp a little bit in terms of like thinking of things and, oh, why does this print work? Or why does this image work so well that this photographer took? I like that, or I don't like that, or whatever, you know. It's been really good, and it really always just reinforces to me just the value of printing and how important that is. Because a lot of the stuff we do is for family photographers and wedding photographers, and so it's humans celebrating other people in their lives that they love and that are important to them, and they're hanging it on their walls so they can stare at it every day and remember that human to human connection that they have. And so it's it still feels like, even though maybe I'm not photographing personally, we're still kind of facilitating like the value of photography and how important it is, and that everybody should have it, celebrate it, and that it just connects us to our memories in a lot of ways and our life experiences. And you know, when you're printing something, there's just something about the commitment to that that is so kind of powerful. And as stuff is more digital now, being able to like really put your money down for something and dedicate a physical space for it, is, you know, still pretty special that people do that, even though some people would say maybe print is dead or it's dying, but it's like, I don't know. It's definitely shifting, but there's still people out there that want it a lot.
Yeah. I think everything gets declared dead at some point, and that's how you know you're a real art form, right?
Like everything radio is dead.
Yeah. Radio was dead. Like, and then podcasts happen, and then suddenly actually like audio is a huge deal, and like video's gone, but then YouTube, I don't know, like it just, I feel like everything's got to have a hot take. I will say, on the print front, I had a listener fairly early on in doing the show, it's only just over a year old, I had a listener, a guy called Tom, shout out to Tom, he sent me a print through the post. He lives in Australia. So like the effort that took for him to send me a print in the post, and it's beautiful, it's in a frame behind me on the wall, but just wonderful thing for someone to do. And it meant so much more, because you know it's someone who's listened to something or is related, you know, they're relating to something you've produced, and this is, you know, they're like, oh, this person will like this then, because they've talked about other things. And I think it's a way of kind of sharing perspective and things that like is vastly underrated, you know, like printing photo books and stuff like that is a, you know, again, it doesn't have to go on sale or go in a museum. It just has to like make it and send it to someone. I mean, the other end of it, I had Craig Mod. Running a podcast is like being a taxi driver. Like, you just talk to people, just go, add that Craig Mod in my podcast the other week. But Craig was on talking about, he did a fine art book, and then he's worked with Random House to do a more expanded version of it. But because it's kind of a more mainstream, like you'd pick it up in Barnes and Noble kind of book, the printing's different. And so they're not printing the photos in the same way. And so he lent into the fact that the photos would be black and white, and he changed the contrast a little and adjusted them for printing. And as he said at the time, had like made his peace with the way that they were going to look. You know, they weren't going to look the same as in the fine art edition, but that's okay. You know, it is what it is. And then this, you know, quote unquote, lower quality version arrived. And he was like, oh, this is great. And I actually really like it. I like the texture. I like the grain. I can kind of, you know, we've lent into it in the right way. And so it's just that thing as well of printing something. It doesn't have to be just a print. Like, you've got amazing prints behind you that look like Buffalo, you know, an incredible, like, that looks like an amazing print. But it doesn't have to be an amazing print. It can also be like a shitty little Instax square thing. It still can be meaningful and, like, means be great in the moment, you know?
Yeah, I think people should always be printing their stuff. I think there's a real danger that, I mean, I've seen articles and things where people are talking about, like, you know, having photos of their kids and their children and stuff. If it's all like on hard drives or in the cloud, there's a really legit chance something's going to get like literally lost. Like if the hard drive fails or somebody doesn't know their password and somebody passes away or whatever, like it's just locked, you know, and they have to really dig to get access to that and contact the companies and like, you know, but there's still something about having just prints in a box or an album somewhere that you can just keep safe and flip through. That is, you know, people don't do it often, but when you do it, it's meaningful. Or if, I don't know, photography for me is always, even at weddings, I've always had, even here at the print lab, we have stuff all the time where like somebody passes away. And like the first thing they're doing is like, I need to get prints of this, or this has to be visible at the funeral, or, you know, we need to run a slideshow of this person's life. And it's always through the photographs. And so a lot of times it's like, you don't realize how valuable some of this stuff is until tragedy strikes or whatever. Anytime even a celebrity dies, like you just see social media flooded with like images and their history. And it's like a mini kind of slideshow of well, everything they've done. So photography has been undervalued a lot by social media companies. So in some way, we're definitely trying to like resurrect that and get that feeling back for people of like, they're important, so they should have their own space that's built just for that, that's dedicated to like the whole infrastructure is dedicated to like finding them and experiencing them in different ways and all that. So yeah, it's a fun challenge and something that I just, it just, it's kept me going for however many, you know, 27 years or something now, so I don't feel like I'm will be stopping. It's definitely like a lifelong endeavor to kind of solve these problems and enjoy working through them.
Yeah. I think the other reason why it's so good to have someone on who has dedicated themselves to something like that and their business is focused upon it is that this is something a lot of folks don't think of as well in terms of things like records and music and stuff. But like these, the big companies, like the big five that really mediate a lot of people's access to storing imagery, for example, like your Facebooks and your Apples and Googles and whatever, Amazons, photo sharing and stuff, like it's a rounding error to them. It's something that they offer to get you as part of like, you know, upgrade the package, because then you buy the storage and then you buy the bigger phone and you buy the phone because it has the better camera and da da da. But it's not core to what they're doing. This is why I used to find the record labels beating up Spotify was such a weird thing to do, because like they're on your side, like Apple and Amazon go like, don't give a shit. Like then they're just offering the music because they feel like they need to offer music, and they're just going to go in. It's the lowest common denominator. No, Apple run a radio station for lols. They kidnapped Zane Lowe. He's trapped there now. Like, you know, they do this. It's a sort of a thing that they just do because they, for reasons, but it's not really because they love music. And it's the same with photography and stuff like that. I think especially now that Phil Schiller is kind of like in his twilight years at Apple, like I feel like he's the last one there who like, of the old guard that really loves photography. The people who work on the camera, I'm sure they love photography, but they're not in a position of power and influence where they're like, no, this company is going to exist for image making and here's why. Yeah. You know, right. So a bunch of them might own a Hasselblad and they might, you know, talk about Leica lenses like they love them, but that's they can't turn around and make Apple care passionately and significantly about photography. Like the Pixel team had the same challenge at Google. You know, those first Pixel cameras were cool because they were looking at Rembrandts and they were looking at other works of art and they were setting the kind of the style of the contrast and the way the image is rendered based on other things. And then those people get sick of not being able to move the needle and leave. And then you just get the same hypersaturated HDR everything that everyone makes, because in the shop they want theirs to be the brightest. And it's sort of, so this is why I say this out loud as like I'm a man shouting at windmills, but it's just nice to have someone on who has had that same moment and gone, no, I'm going to do something about this because I care about image quality and I won't compress everything to death, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we have, I don't know, man, we're trying to just do, you know, we're one day at a time right now, but they're definitely like dream things that it would be cool for us to get into if things take off enough to where we have, you know, a decent amount of cash flow or revenue coming in. There's just ideas sometimes I'm like, it'd be cool to like dabble in this arena, and we're definitely not, the core thing for us is always photography. So it's not always going to be, it doesn't always have to be a digital product or experience. Like I said, printing should be important. Yeah. Something we want to build in to the app at some point. Cause I think people should just be able to either buy art from people they like or print their own photos, or, you know, there's a lot of stuff with it, storage, but yeah, part of me is like, man, it would be really cool to like make a camera, someday. That would last. So, you know, it's me just going back to these point and shoots, and I'm researching like the premium point and shoots and then like the cheap point and shoots and like all these different things. And all of them, they're like, these are from like the 80s and 90s. It's going to die. And then it's just a brick and like all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm like, there's so much fun. I'm like, somebody should not, you know, somebody should make more. And I know there's like small digital ones you can use and stuff, but I'm always partial to film. Or like, maybe it should be more mechanical and something that'll last 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Pretty easily. I mean, you still see stuff like the M6 with like, it's just, there's just stuff with it's mechanical. I still have my very first camera ever, the Minolta X700. I still can shoot it. It works great. It's got it, you know, it's whatever, 40, you know, it's like almost as half a century old at this point.
Yeah.
So if you build quality things, they're going to last. I don't feel like there's not a huge need to come out with a new digital DSLR every year. It's like an iPhone thing. Like, just how much money Canon and Nikon spend refreshing these things? Yeah. Like, have you not nailed it yet? Like, what are we still tweaking this thing for? It's like, well, it's got to tweak the sensor just a little bit and add more size and pixels and stuff. But obviously, they got to keep making money, so they have to keep producing it. So.
I did have a previous guest say that. He was like, if you want there to be an M12, you've got to buy the M11. And I was like, God damn it.
Yeah, well, I just think there should just, that's, I mean, I understand why the M6 is so high, because you just, you just make the good thing and then you don't have to like reinvent it. It's just, there's, can be less, you don't have to, the consumerism cycle is too much, I feel like, and in the obsolescence where it's like going to purposely break in 5 years. It's frustrating. Like, as I get older, I want things to be built correctly. And, you know, this is going to last 50 to 100 years if you take care of it, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It may cost more, but you don't, you just need to buy one and then just, you're done. You don't need to, and then just use that tool and that's it. Yeah. But I'm also entering my old age, so.
Well, I think, you know, I've got a bunch of free highlights too. And I saw an advert recently from 1971 that Leica put out. It was an ad in American magazine that was like, perhaps you, like 12,000 other Americans this year, will choose this more expensive camera over the competition for like these reasons. And it was very specifically designed to just speak to someone who, like you say, a person who saw that ad and bought a camera, there's a fairly good chance that camera still works, right? Compared to...
Yeah.
The Fuji or Canon or whatever that they could have or might have bought at the same time or whatever. And it's like, I look at that Pentax 17 that's just been released like last year and think, that looks fantastic, but it is all plastic construction and you can fix it now. But like, it's the same with repairability and things like electronics, like your headphones. I need some new wireless headphones. Got a big trip coming up. My wife and I share a pair, but we'll both be on this trip. And I've been looking at Sony XM4s, and XM5s, and thankfully the Sonys, you can actually replace the battery in them fairly easily. So I feel pretty good about buying those noise cancelling headphones because like they'll last and I can repair them. But even companies that make repairable, in inverted commas, like electronics, they're selling a battery now, but they're saying, well, if we change the headphones in the future, maybe we'll use a different battery. Whereas the Sony's, at least, it's like it's a standard cell and it's got a plug on the end. I don't even have to desolder anything. I'm like, that's great. You know, that's what you want. But I shouldn't have to go on iFixit and figure that out. Like, it should be it should be on the back of the box. Like, do you know what a screwdriver is? You too can repair these.
Yeah, exactly. I've always been really influenced by, at least here in the United States, by Patagonia and how they kind of handle their business and how they run like repair and recycle services, and you can like mail stuff back and to them and they'll like fix it for you and like ship it back to you or whatever. You know, I think it's a lot of this, I don't know, like I've just wondered, there's definitely not all humans, like humans are in this weird place where we're really, we want speed and convenience, but we still have underneath all, we still have a deep appreciation for slow experiences, like slow food or, you know, not fast fashion. Like I'm going to buy this jacket and I'm going to wear it for 20 or 30 years. It might cost a lot, but like, I don't need that many jackets or a really good pair of boots or something where you're kind of investing in something for the long term. In some ways, going cheap all the time is more expensive. You're just constantly, constantly buying stuff, even though the one single purchase is low, but you're buying it 30 times or whatever versus just the one purchase and you're done. It's been good. I've definitely been. I usually don't geek out on gear, but I've been more YouTube rabbit trailing some stuff in terms of like what's the cheapest rangefinder I could find, and it's like this Canonet, like it's from like 1974 that you can get for like $100, and it's only has one fixed lens on it, but you know, you just take the, you know, the battery, you don't even need the battery, it's just manual and it still works great. So it's like okay, I haven't bought one, but you know, just interesting.
Yeah,
some of these just mechanical cameras, I'm like, man, just, it's not that, you don't need that many parts to them.
No, a sealed box, sealed off from the light. What's the fixed lens on that?
A 40, like 1.7.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That would do, because I've been looking at M5s recently, but apparently they're a nightmare to fix.
Well, the Canon, I don't know if you can fix it, but I mean, there is, it was like literally the most popular camera in the 70s or something. And it's a rangefinder, and you can get, there's tons of them, and that's like, but they're between like a $75 to up to $200 if you find like a mint one. But
the thing that puts me off getting something like an M5 film camera or something is that I want that rangefinder experience, but they're expensive. They're like viewfinders on digital cameras, where they're one of the things that people have noticed that a buyer is willing to pay extra for, right? So like, it feels like the internet has done its research and found every rangefinder that, and anything that's like Leica's cost this, anything similar to that kind of costs, you know, adjacent to, they've worked out what the market will bear. So if there's one that actually I could get my film fixed without having to go down an M5 rabbit hole, which, you know, they're a bit tricky. I would love one though, because it's the ugly one that everybody hates.
It's a
kind of
chunkier one.
Yeah, it just it's the weird alternate future Leica where they just. I think it looks really rad, but everyone who looks at it is like, it's not an M4 or an M6 or an M7. You know, it's not. Right. It's like when Porsche briefly changed the design and then went, no, can't do that again. And
too far.
And then everything is just the 911 for eternity. Right. It's the same thing. But yeah, maybe one day. I did see a model on eBay once. That was quite cool.
Oh, okay.
Looked kind of pristine.
Yeah. Look at the Canonet. You might like it. So.
It's the right focal length. I quite like, I'm 35 guy traditionally.
Yeah. 35 is a great focal length. Yeah. So it's a 40. So it's a little closer, but it's not a 50. So it's a little wider. So it's a interesting, it is a bear apparently to, the whatever, the lens ring that you, if you want to put a filter or something on it, it's like a weird, diameter. So it's like 48 or something. And it's apparently really hard to find. So that's the one.
Yeah.
You know, but they look like fun. So I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe one day I'll spring on one and test it out.
Yeah. Well, 3D printers exist. Like, you could adapt a thing, I'm sure. Like 3D yeah. print 48 down to 46. Yeah. I'm sure you'd get away with it.
Yeah.
Just a bit of vignetting. Be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the vibes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Part of me is really like, you know, if Photo ever like becomes like a huge company, I've always been like, I'd really like to figure out a way to keep film going. Just because I personally love it so much. And there's so many people, you know, a lot of people that do. But I really tried to find a digital that I like. I mean, I have like Fuji X-T3 and all that. I still just can't get past the electronic viewfinder. Like it just, it's okay. Mm. But I like to manual focus everything. And I just can't see well through them, I feel like. So yeah. I don't know.
Especially in low light.
I've never been like a big autofocus person. So right. I'd rather manual focus. So I'm always wanting just an optical. I just want my eyeball to look through a piece of glass and focus it. So
yeah. But. Have you ever tried the Fuji, like the X1 or the X-Pro, sorry? Because they've got that hybrid viewfinder, haven't they?
No, I have not. So those are, yeah. Like I tend to shy away from gear. So I haven't got to even play with those that much. I've been kind of out of the photo community in terms of like in-person things where I could just like borrow somebody's and look through it. But I don't know, hopefully we'll, you know, that's something else we're talking about. Hopefully we'll kind of help with that too in terms of in-person events. But yeah, but anyway, there's just, cool. Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff.
Well, on that topic, what's the roadmap look like for photo for here on out? Like, what are you thinking is the next sort of year, 2 years?
Like features?
Yeah.
Desktop, like browser version is like really high up on the list. Portfolios we're hoping to have out end of May, if all goes well. Mm-hmm. That's our hope. Carousels where people can add maybe like 5 images into a single post. Portfolios will be like 40, more like a website, and like a portfolio that you update over time. We started designing collections. So if you think a little more like Pinterest, where you can, as you're, you know, scrolling through photo, and if you find some images you like, or if you want to search for certain things, and you can, you know, save those and add them to a collection. You can nickname the collection, and these can be like public or private. Other people can look through other people's collections. So it's a little bit, you know, and people can use them for different things, whether it's a mood board or you can collaborate if you're an art director, want to like work on stuff. Or, I don't know, I feel like people could use them in a lot of different ways, but it's also a great tool for discovery. Humans also just like to collect things because that's just how we are. But, you know, you can make one for portraits or black and white portraits or whatever, or buy a certain camera type, you know, if you want to look at like large format cameras and just have a collection of that type of work or, you know, whatever. So, so that's a feature. Lists will be one, which is like curating people. So, you could assign people you're following. You basically can create little lists of them. So they're organized. I think we've all experienced like, if I follow too many people, I can't keep track of everybody. It's just too much going on. So, but if you could segment those people that you follow into your own siloed, organized categories that you make sense to you as an individual user, then, and you can scroll through those like home feeds of just those specific lists of people. So you could have a list for your friends or a list for family, a list for whatever, you know, street photographers, landscape photographers, like, you know, you can kind of just self-assign. And it's that way, instead of when you're doing a chronological feed like we are currently, it extends the value of the chronological feed, because instead of just having 100% of your followers in one feed and you have to like scroll forever, you could kind of scroll horizontally and then down to see certain accounts that you just want to like really see all the time, essentially, and don't want to miss things. So we're trying to think through stuff like that to organize stuff. So, but we'll have more pro features. Like eventually we want to have, like I said, printing services, but that'll be tied to hopefully like a shop. It's gonna be very complicated to build because of taxes and shipping and all like the legal stuff that we have to really, all the, there's a lot more legal hoops that we had to jump through for that future. But it would be great if people could, you know, photo can be, become a resource for people to find art or things that they want to purchase. And just head directly on there versus having to make people go to your website and you risk losing them because they're going from one place to another, that kind of deal. And we, I've learned a lot of lessons through printing and like how to present them and how to sell that stuff for the past 10 years with printing and the photographers I work with that sell framed and frame prints and wall art all the time. So, yeah, I mean, that's probably the short list. I mean, we have a roadmap on our website, but there's just endless things. We always obviously have to improve search and discovery over the next year or two, like in a major way. So we're always going to be, that's just something we're always going to be chipping away at and improving as we go. So that's the big, probably the browser and like better search and discovery and portfolios are probably the big three that we have right now.
Yeah. So. It's really, I think it's my day job's in games. So I think of a lot of, in terms of like you're dropping features on people as well. Like I think what you're doing is the right way in terms of we've done conversions of games to bring them to new platforms. And if the game's been out for ages, you can't just drop all the features on people. Like it's too much day one. Mm-hmm. So like the frustrating forcing function of having to build something over time is also usually pretty good for people using the thing as well, because like what you're describing there of like if you'd launched day one with like unfollow this group and then swipe across to a different swim lane and then scroll, is like, you know, that you're going to give yourself the time to show that in a way that makes sense, and for people who've come along on the journey with you, it's nice, it's kind of additive over time, and then at the end of a year you can look back and as a user and go, oh, actually now it does all these things. But if it had done it day one, it's like Fortnite. When I play Fortnite now and I try and explain it to someone who's never played it before, it's just like, Christ, I don't know, man. Like there's a million, there's several currencies. You're collecting them all at a different rate and they're all just designed to make you have one more go. Like, but that does extract all of the joy from it. Really.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we're, I think that's kind of the software side. I mean, outside of that, we, you know, we're going to be pushing heavy into more podcast episodes. And then we would like to somehow get involved in in-person events or like pop-up exhibitions. I don't know. Like, there's so many things and exciting, cool things I think we can do, and get people kind of gathering face to face. And I realized that I need to probably be going pretty soon to some of these events and conferences that are going on around the globe and making myself a little more available to meet people and do photo walks and just kind of connect. So, you know, that's not something that I'm planning on in the future.
Cool. Well, we'll look forward to welcoming you to a Scottish event. At some point. You'll have to make your way to the Highlands. I live in, as the Germans say, Das Mittel von nowhere. So, you know, there's dozens of us up here. But yeah. Well, for people listening who are excited to find out more about Photo, where can they find out about more about Photo and find the podcast? And where would you like to point them?
Yeah, the best place is just go to the website, which is photoapp.co. So photoapp.co. There you'll see a link to like our Substack. The roadmap is there. Our podcast is on our Substack. So, but you can also just find it by searching Photo on Apple, Spotify. The links to download Photo, the app is just directly on our website. You can also search, you know, Apple App Store and Android, Google Play Store. So, yeah.
Cool. There you go. You should. The pro podcast bit at the end where he's like, we're on all the major things.
We're on all the things, yeah.
Come find us on all the things. I've got my practiced kind of like thing. My kid was copying it. Like I saw him playing something he was playing and he was doing the podcast closing bit, but like a version of it, but like if he were seven.
Right.
And I realized that like, oh no, I've maybe broken my child. Like he's overhearing me sort of going like, don't forget to like and subscribe, that kind of thing. I'm like, oh no, what are we doing?
Right.
But you know, everyone works for someone.
Exactly. It's the future. Yeah.
This was a load of fun. Thank you so much for coming and having a chat and talking about the app. And I am loving it and will continue to post and hope others... Hope we send some folks your way too.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and this was a lot of fun to chat.
Yeah, cool, man. All right, have a lovely rest of the day. Take care.
Thanks.
A huge thank you to Michael for being on the show and taking the time to talk to me there. That was a fun episode. I like talking to software people. I mean, I know I do it every day at work, but it's still nice to talk to makers of different types of things. Maybe I've inadvertently pigeonholed myself by making this only about photography. Maybe I have to change the whole podcast. Prime things. Doesn't quite have the same ring to it, does it? I'm going to have an existential crisis about the podcast name. Whilst I'm doing that, if you enjoyed this, don't forget that you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. So that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, Amazon Music. Don't forget to follow the show in those places. You can also watch on YouTube if you like. I mean, it's audio only, but still. You can also sign up to the weekly newsletter. That goes out every Wednesday, and you can get more information about that at ianfarrell.com/sign-up, and there's a link to that in the show notes. I think that'll do. Have a fantastic week. We'll see you next time.